Hello, everyone. My name is Marie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Marie.
Nice to hear you. This is the time when I speak, when I'm asked to speak, that I have the opportunity to remember what happened to me, where I came from, what I've been through, what I've walked through, where I am today, all that kind of stuff. This is that opportunity for me, so it's always an honor and a wonderful opportunity to be able to speak. And that's why I come to AA, is to remember all that kind of stuff. The reason I'm here is because I'm an alcoholic and I don't want to ever forget that. And I remember that by coming to these meetings. And when I first came here, I was told to do that. Because when I first came, I couldn't imagine how I would live without a drink. Not for a day. And in this program and in these rooms, they told me that all I needed to do was stay away from one drink, the first drink, one day at a time, and come to meetings like this, and that could happen for me, which at the time seemed impossible. I couldn't figure out how just coming to rooms like this and listening to people like you was going to help me to not drink. That seemed phenomenal to me, because not drinking at that time for me was monumental. How do you not drink? How do you live without a drink? I couldn't even picture life without a drink. I couldn't even understand people that didn't drink. Why were they alive? You know, what did they do? And here it was told to me that this program could work for me. And all I had to do was keep coming one day at a time. And so, of course, I did. I came one day at a time. And in March, I had 34 years of sobriety one day at a time, continuous sobriety. So certainly, I can tell you from my heart, I believe in this program and that it works. There is no question in my mind that this program will not work for anyone if they want it, and they do it, you know. Because I was hopeless, I thought, when I came here. I thought I was truly hopeless. And I was very young. I was 20 years old when I came to the program. So now you all know I'm 54 years old. And although I was 20 years old, doesn't mean that I wasn't sick and at a bottom. That was plenty enough for me to be here, you know. It doesn't work that way, because what I had to learn is this disease, it is a disease, and it doesn't know age, and it doesn't know male, female, tall, short, what color you are. It doesn't know that. It just is a disease, and if you have it, it's going to hit, and it's going to hit very hard, and it's going to hurt, and it's going to kill if you don't do something about it. And how the progression goes, no one knows. No one knows that. I don't know. I've stopped trying to figure that out. You know, a lot of things I stopped trying to figure out about this disease, alcoholism, I just accept that it is. I just know that it is. And I know that I have it. And that's all I need to know for me, that I have to keep doing what I need to do. But it's not that bad of a disease today as I see it, because if I don't drink, it's pretty okay. And plus, it brought me to this place, Alcoholics Anonymous. I would have never come here if I didn't have this disease. So it gave me an opportunity to live a life and get to know people and steps and ideas and ways of life that I would have never known. Because not only did I not know how to stop drinking or not drink for one day, I didn't know how to live either. I really didn't know anything when I got here. So it's helped me in so many ways. It's been a journey, a path, a good path of sobriety. When I got here, like I said, I was 20 years old, and but last night I had some friends over at my house from Champlain again, from the program that I've met. And some of the guys from Plattsburgh, Matt and them, they came over. Matt's a free man, he can make it over the border now. It's like that in AA, most people can't get over the border, but that's okay. Stick around, you'll get over the border if you can. But, so they came all excited, and we got to talking about, you know, what it was like when we got here, which is nice to remember that, so it's fresh in my mind. And I remembered what I was like, and that's what I have to remember. And at that time, I was physically sick, very physically sick, and I was severely, severely blown up and overweight. I took off 100 pounds in my first year and a half of sobriety, and it was all just from liver damage and alcohol bloatedness, really. My face was puffed out, and my eyes were like, you know, this, and the blowing up of the cheeks, and the whites of my eyes were yellowish, and I remember I had scabs all over my face, and black and blue marks all over my body, and my stomach was, you know, way gone. And it looked like I was going to give birth any minute, but I wasn't pregnant. And I remember the people didn't know that I was young. I started my AA in Brooklyn, New York, which was where I was at the time. And they didn't know that I was young, you know. That always impressed me. They always remember that. They just didn't know because I looked so bad. I probably look a lot worse than I look now, you know. But... And I didn't know that, because on the inside I knew, but they look at me. And I remember after a while, they finally said, "You're young, aren't you?" Many months. They said, "How old are you anyway?" So I remember that because it shows to me the physical shape that I must have been in. And it's things like that I need to remember, because that's what alcohol did to me. And not only it did that to me, it put me in a state of mind that I wasn't even aware of it. That's what really scares me about alcohol. That you can be and do all these things and not even know. That's really frightening, you know. That's really frightening, unless people tell you about it. That's a real scary way to live. And that's what I really love about sobriety. You know, no matter what I go through, even if it's not that great, or if I take a look at, oh, that wasn't such a good thing, I can see that. I can at least know today and have a choice. I can have a choice. And even if something isn't that good, I can correct it, you know. Thank God for that, for the awareness. So I have to remember, no matter what goes on in my life, being an active alcoholic, drinking, is the worst possible thing on the face of this earth. And how I remember that is I just keep coming to AA. It's not really that difficult. Just keep coming here, keep an open mind, keep open to fellow alcoholics, and keep taking what I need to remember that, because God forbid I don't want to pick up a drink. I've seen what happens to people that do. And I know what happened to me. And this is the place to know that. At that time, my friends said to me, "How did you get to AA?" Because 34 years ago, there were no rehabs or hospitals or anything for alcohol. So there was nothing at all. And I had to think, and I remembered how I got to AA was one morning I woke up. I was in an apartment. And I remember I was sick and shaking like terrible, as I usually did all the time when I didn't have a drink in me. And I looked in the mirror and I decided, and I looked at my little baby. I had a baby at that time. She was in the crib. And I realized I couldn't do this anymore. Something hit me. God, a spiritual awakening, something. I don't know. In her, I saw I couldn't do this anymore. I couldn't do this anymore. Because I couldn't see it for myself, but through her, I could see I couldn't do this anymore. I was going to kill her besides myself, you know? Because often alcoholics like myself get here in many different ways, not for myself, because I didn't care about myself. It wouldn't have brought me here. It was for someone else, which is fine, because if we stay long enough to see that we need it for ourselves, it's going to work out anyway, you know? But I was still in that state where I didn't care if I lived or died. So it's the grace of God that brought me here. And I needed to call someone, and I thought I would call this family doctor that I had been seeing for a prescription for Valiums, one of the many doctors I was seeing for the many prescriptions, for the many things, one of the seven. And this one I liked, so I thought I'd call him, and I remember at the time I had the rotary phone, you know. And to remember how bad of a shape I was in, I couldn't dial the phone. It was too hard to keep my finger in there, because I was shaking that bad. It would just keep slipping. That's what I remember. So I actually had to call someone up to come over to the house to call someone. That's how sick I was. And how I got I clicked the little button at the time the operator comes on, and I said, "Operator, I'm blind. Can you dial a number for me?" And I made her dial my mother's number, but I couldn't dial. And I said, "Just come over. And she came over and she saw the shape I was in. And I said, "You have to make phone calls for me. I need help." And that's how it began. And she first dialed the family doctor. And I just remember talking like crazy. I don't know what I said, but I was saying drinking alcohol. I was throwing those words in, drinking and alcohol. And I remember what I needed to remember, which was, you're an alcoholic, you need AA. That's all I remember. And that's all I needed to remember, you see. And then, how do you call AA? And they got AA for me. So that was my first day without a drink. And at that time, I couldn't live without a drink. It had brought me, I went through many phases of alcohol. I started very young. I drank through high school. I drugged, I smoked, I whatever there is. Whatever there was available at the time to take in that would make me stoned or high or crazy or whatever. That always amazes me, you know. I was a hippie, you know, and back in the 60s. LSD, anything that would make me crazy. You know, I think of that today. Today I do anything I can to not feel crazy. You know where I'm coming from? Anything. I read books, I pray, I do meetings, I stay away from the wrong people. I go to any length to not feel crazy. You know, but back then, I did anything that I thought could make me feel crazy. Someone said, hey, we have this new thing, you smoke it, you put it in your hair. Hey, I'll try to make you feel crazy, I'm up for that. You know what I mean? What a change, what a change of life. Anything not to be sober. I hated being sober, you know what I mean? It's cold, sober, straight, nothing. It was the worst thing. Today I will do anything to be clean and sober. What a change. You know? So this program has really done wonders for me, I'll tell you. You know, so there I was at that time, though, in that place where I'll do anything not to be sober. So my last drink was vodka, big half gallons with the handle, the cheapest vodka you can get, the most free money, that's the idea. And I used to buy them with penny rolls, you know, I mean, really classy. I'd go to the liquor store with the penny rolls. And I had a long coat, like a maxi coat, every time I remember. And I remember I had this flowered flannel nightgown long. I put the coat over the nightgown so no one I'm in my nightgown. Of course, it always, on the bottom, was a little bit longer than the coat. You'd see the little flannel on the bottom. But I was in that state where you don't know what's happening, so I thought I looked good. And I would go with the penny rolls and buy the vodka. And always tell the person the same story. Oh, my mother-in-law is coming over again. She drinks so much. I'll have to buy vodka. Thinking the guy believes me, you know? Everything is about, you know, when I drank anyway, it's all about no one's supposed to know I'm drinking. This is what I remember. I have to hide it. They don't know. Nobody knows I drink. Now, you know, I described what I look like and how I dress and how. So, but in my mind, I'm fooling everyone. So I think. Now, the black and blues I had, I'll explain, were from bouncing off the walls. That's what, you know, like, when you're drinking, you have to go from one room to the next, and the doorways are narrow. You understand where I'm coming from? It's easy to miss, you know, when you're drinking, okay? So, this was why I was black and blue. But nobody knew I was drinking, I thought. I really thought I was slick. So here I am telling the guy again and the thing. Oh, and by the way, another thing, and my son is here tonight. He drove from here. He's from New York, but not anymore. He just moved here 2 weeks ago. But, and we had this collection of silver dollars. Now you know where the silver dollars are. From old, you know, my grandmother's and my uncle, whatever. And I remember one time I went with 10 silver dollars in my pocket. The old, you know, 1800, that now I could kill myself. And my mom, I said, will you accept silver dollars in this store? Like, will you accept silver dollars? And the whole line went, hey, we'll buy some money. So I whipped the money out of their pocket. And in 2 seconds, people bought the silver dollars off me. I was like, ooh, wow, I can get 3 bottles of vodka today. Am I lucky? I could kill myself now. But anyway, this is, you know, at that time in my life, what I know is the most precious thing to me, which is really sad, was alcohol. There was nothing more precious than alcohol. Nothing mattered. Nothing was more important. That's an alcoholic. That's a real alcoholic. Nothing counted. Nothing was of value but how I can get the next amount of alcohol to get in my system. What a sad life, you know? What a really pathetic way to live. Alcoholism, it's a terrible disease. And so I bought the vodka to make the drink, of which I used to hide the vodka in an empty ammonia bottle under my kitchen sink. So nobody should know I drank. And went home. Now, my morning drink was half of that cheap vodka and half Pepto-Bismol in a glass, mixed it with a spoon. Because by that time, I couldn't hold anything down anymore. And my morning routine was wake up and vomit, blood and bile, and when it stops, try to hold down the Pepto-Bismol on the vodka. Now, I remember this very, very vividly because I come here. I might forget it. God forbid I might forget that. I might drink again. I don't ever want to drink again. So I come here, I talk about it, I remember it, and it keeps me sober. And other stories that I hear, that keeps me sober. Now that was me, this person who stands here before you. That was how I lived every day, one day at a time. And my morning prayer was, Dear God, I hope I can keep this down. And sometimes I didn't keep it down on the first shot, you know. And that was lousy, because then I felt like, wow, I'm wasting good vodka. That was the problem. That was my problem. And that was my life. And I don't ever want to forget that. And it's worse than that. You know, I can go on and on. It's worse than that. But that's the idea of a life of an alcoholic. And I was 20, and they said there were no rehab and detox at the time. I had gone to doctors and tested. I went to all the tests to see what's wrong with my stomach, you know. I never told anyone I drank, you know. Do you drink? No, not me. You know, I want to find out why I vomit blood on a regular basis. And everything always came out negative, and there was no hospitals at the time for alcoholics and psychiatrists. And I went to a psychiatrist, and they said, Do you drink? And he said, Do you drink? And I said, No, I don't even drink, you know. So then I had electric shock treatments when I was 19 because I couldn't figure out why I was messed up. And that didn't help because I drank on the way to and on the way back from the electric shock treatment, you know. And that was my life. So last night the question my friends said was, You were so young when you got here. You're lucky. You didn't have to really suffer much. And I remembered my story, and it's not true. You see, the disease doesn't know that I was young. It doesn't know how tall I am. It doesn't know what background I came from. It doesn't know anything. It hit me, and it hit me hard. And the truth is, I'm just lucky to be standing here talking about it and be alive. Real lucky. Because I don't know. If I went another week, I could be under the ground. I could be put away forever in a rubber room with a straitjacket. I don't know. I could have killed someone or myself. I don't know. I might not have had another day. But thank God. God is good. And He gets us here right on time. Right on time. Just when we're supposed to be here, we get here. And we stay here. It's not so bad. In fact, it's pretty damn good. It's pretty damn good. Because as this program showed me that I could live without a drink one day at a time, my life started to unfold and change. And I started to change, really. That's really what happened. And then it showed me the steps and ideas and slogans and ways of being and thinking that I could have never imagined. I came here saying, I just want to be able to not drink, please God. I just want to be normal. I want to be normal. Please, God, will I ever be normal? And what I've been given today is I'm sober and I haven't drank one day at a time, and I'm normal. I can say that I'm normal. That's amazing. You know what? It's like, I'm normal. You know how tough that is to say? You know how many years that took me to say I'm normal? I wouldn't dare say it after a lot of years. But today I can say, no, I'm normal. That's a miracle. For me, the miracle of all miracles. I'm sober and I'm a normal human being. And the best part is that my idea of normal today is much better than it was then. At that time, my idea of normal would have been like, really, today, wow, that's lousy. It improved, as I stated in this program. It's much better than I knew to be normal. It's wonderful, in fact. I can be happy. Happy. I could never imagine that I could be happy. Happy, just, you know, the minimum, because I came from such a bad place, like a life, sober, functioning. Those are my goals, you know. Appearing to be normal, which I did my first couple of years in sobriety, I admit. All I did was, I have to show that I'm normal. That was for a couple of years. I wasn't quite the normal yet. So, you know, you practice looking normal. You learn in here how to look normal. You listen. You know, what to say, how to be. And it's like, I hope nobody knows I'm not normal, you know. I won't say too much. But that's okay. That was on the way to normal. It's part of it, you know. And I kept coming and not drinking. It was on the way. It's okay. Everything's on the way. Everything's on the way to something better, I realize now. You know, everything I've ever done in this program, as long as I didn't drink, I kept coming here and I kept doing the best I could at any given time. It was always on the way to something better, you know. And then spirituality comes in, which I had none. None. Just Catholic Church, you know. Everybody who can relate to that, you know where I'm coming from. Just a scary guy that's going to punish me and all kind of stuff. So then I had decided there is no God. I had come to a place where I decided there is no God. Because it was better than thinking there was one, because the one that I believed in was so horrible, I just didn't want it. But I came here and I gave it another chance, you know. And for me, life is interesting. I'll tell you, God has surprises everywhere. My sponsor, the one that I stuck with after 2.5 years I was sober, and then I found the right sponsor for me. I've been through 7 in the 2. They're always wrong. They weren't right, you know. I was okay, they were wrong, you know. But the one, for whatever reason, I stuck with happened to be a minister of Unity Church. And that was the one that I stuck with. So I got spirituality, you know, in spite of myself. So a lot of things happened in here for me in spite of me, just because I kept coming here. God always has these good things in mind for me. All kinds of good things that I couldn't imagine. Today I believe in God. I have a higher power. Because I realized through the program and sobriety and steps, people, lots of people, that the God of my understanding today is far greater and more pleasantly surprising than I knew. You know, so I'm not afraid. I like to believe in God. It's always going to be something pleasantly surprising, you know. When I start to think of things, they're not as good. They're limiting. They're fearful. They're a little bit crazy, you know. But God is pretty cool, you know, today. I love it. I love walking with God. As long as I can just live in a place of not knowing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I can actually stay for days not knowing. Like, I don't know. I could never do that. You know, I have to know. I know. I had to know what's coming, what's going on. I have to know everything. There's no such thing as, gee, I don't know, but that's all right. No, I have to know, you know. And today I don't have to know. It's all right. The more I know, the less I know. It's okay. The more I learn, the more I see I didn't know stuff. And I like that place, because every day is different, one day at a time. And every day is going to be something new coming into my life. I'm going to share this. Last week I was supposed to speak here. I was sick. And I got to explain it. So anyway, what I have is Meniere's syndrome. If anyone in the room knows what that is, raise your hand. I didn't think so. Okay. No one ever knows what that is, so I don't talk about it much. But I have Meniere's syndrome, which is an inner ear malfunction of the inner ear, that you just get, you acquire, you're born with. And if you have that, all it means is every so often you have an attack of Meniere's, which means when you wake up in the morning, well, did anybody in the room ever, this I'm sure you're going to get all the hands going up, drink so much, and then you lay down, and right before you throw up, the whole room starts to spin around. Yes? Everyone, that I know. So in AA, I can explain to everyone the feeling that happens to me, because you all know that feeling. The only thing is I'm not drinking, and I don't feel nauseous, and I'll wake up, and the whole thing is spinning. And that's Meniere's syndrome. And usually it's funny. I've had this for 28 years now, and I get it about 3 times a year. You never know when it's going to come, and I wake up, and I'm like, oh, shit, I'm spinning. I make my way into the kitchen. But only my mind is sober, you know. And I watch myself look drunk, you know, it's really funny. I say, well, I'm glad I don't drink. Then I take this medicine and it kind of stabilizes me. So I've had it for a week, I've been on the medicine, I'm pretty good. But if at any point the medicine wears off, I'm going to look pretty bad and stupid trying to go back to that chair. So I try not to speak when I'm like that. Because I'm like, what if the medicine wears off? And all of a sudden I go, thank you, everyone. Come on. Turn it back to my feet, you know? And then start a rumor I've been drinking. So that's why I can't do last week. So tonight I said, nah, I'm going to go speak. I'm sick of it. I've been in the house all week. Let me get out and speak. And I would share that because it's part of my life. It is part of my life, having that. And whatever. It's not that bad. There's worse things to have. Let me tell you a lot worse. Being actively drunk and being like that every day is a lot worse. I can tell you three times a year for a week is not bad, but it does remind me of living that life, you know, and always compensating and trying to look right, you know, trying to look, you know, you're like, and you're always trying to look like you're all right. Man, that really stinks, drinking. Trying to show you're okay when you're not. What a hell of a life. So, it's not like that today, because the gift I've been given in these rooms, more than anything in my sobriety and everything I've been given, is I'm who I am. I'm me. I found out who I am. That was a big trip, a big journey. And it's okay to be who I am, exactly as I am. And that's the most wonderful feeling there is in the world, is to be me and feel okay with who I am. That's it. Because it's all I've ever had, you know. And when I drank, the idea was I didn't like at all who I was. And even in sobriety, it was always about, I have to show people I'm whatever. I think that I'm supposed to show them because who I am is not enough, not good enough, not smart enough, not good looking enough, not tall enough, you name it. You know. And it's not like that today. I'm okay with who I am. And after all these years of sobriety, I found out I'm a human being. And that's all I have to do, is be a human being. It's not so difficult. It gets simpler as I go along. Simpler and simpler and simpler. The program really is very simple. And it was me that always complicated everything. But today it's simple. Life is a day at a time, and I don't know what life will bring me. But it's going to be good, I'm sure. If I don't drink and I do the best I can do every day, that's really kind of simple in how it is. And this program is showing me all of that and how to deal with things and life and make the best of things, not the worst of things anymore, like I used to. And I meet wonderful people in the process. And then sometimes I meet people I don't like, but that's okay. I don't have to like everyone, you know. a lot of you I've seen, a lot of you I've never seen. So just a quick version of my story as I'm looking at the watch, I think it's away. About 10 years ago, I was born in Montreal, and I'm French-Canadian descent on both sides, mother and father, and I was given up for adoption at birth, and so I was raised in Brooklyn by an Italian family. And that's where the Brooklyn accent comes from. He's sitting there going, Phoenicia. It's okay. But it's getting better. You had to hear it a few years ago. It sounded really good. Anyway, so that's my story, and I always wanted to know who my biological family was. All of my life I wanted to know that. For me that was very, very important. From as far back as I can remember, it was a hope, a dream, a wish, a fantasy that someday I might ever meet those people. So for me, at 25 years sober, the surprise of my life came through a series of events within the program. Funny thing happened to me on the way to an AA retreat in Ottawa. And I met my whole biological family shortly after that, when I wasn't looking. So you see, God has plans. I always remember that because for years I went out of my way. I wanted so much to know who my biological family was, even in sobriety, and I'd write letters and I'd go here and I'd do this. And for years I was just anything anyone can do to try to figure this thing out, and it wouldn't happen. And at the time, I remember I was sober 7 years, and it was making me sick. And I finally got on my knees one day, and I said to God, you know what? This is making me sick. I'm obsessed with knowing my roots. I'm going to drink over this. This ain't, this isn't what you want. I said, God, if you want me to know these people, I'm going to turn this over to you. You will bring them to me. And I threw my hands in the air and I let it go. And I never thought about it again, talked about it or anything. And then at 25 years sober, when I wasn't looking, and someone invited me on a retreat in Ottawa, in the program, I just thought, I could have retreat. I ran into someone who knew someone who knew someone who led me to someone, and 2 months later, I was at a family reunion in Quebec City with 30 people who were all my blood relatives. I never met my parents because they were both dead, and that was horrible. But I did meet other people, like my brother, my aunts and uncles, cousins, nieces, nephews, everybody speaking in French. Ha ha, that was lots of fun for me. But it was okay. And I felt like, is this happening, you know? But what I know today from that experience, because it's still the greatest thing that ever happened to me, other than the birth of my son, and that's true, not because he's here. When I say to God now, God, I want this, God, please give me this, give me this. God doesn't say no. He says, not now, sometimes. That's all. He doesn't say no. He says, not now. And anything I really, really feel deep inside of me that I really, really want, chances are God wants that for me too. I believe that. And that's why it never goes away. But he's just saying, not now, maybe. Not now. And that's okay. So if I just have faith in that, I know that God will find a way in the right time, in the right way. It will happen when and how it's supposed to. And so for me, that happened. And of course, I always say that I hope I don't always have to wait like 20 years or so. I don't have that kind of patience. But normally, it's not like that. But this was a big event, okay? So God had to take a while for this one. But it was the perfect time for me, and it was right, and people were receptive, and it changed more of my life, you know? Again, more. Just when you think there's nothing more to go, here I am, 25 years sobriety, but my whole world changed. My whole world changed again for the even better, better. Like, imagine that. I didn't think there was more to go, you know? And I always would say, it doesn't get any better than this. And I say, oh, yes, it does. You think so? It always does. There's no limit to what's going to happen to me. As long as I really stick with this program, I know that stay sober, stick with the things I've learned, my spirituality, stay open to people, love people, love God, you know, help people like I was shown, give what I've been given, accept from people, every day, live in Canada. I like living in Canada. It's been 5 years. I was going to go, it's been 5 years, eh? It's been 5 years. And I love it. I still love it, you know, more and more and more. It was meant to be for me that it would be this way. Obviously, this is my life and I'm following it. And now I have 2 families, you know, one in New York, one in Canada. And it gets bigger. Still haven't learned French. Still stink at French, that's okay. It's in my blood, it's not in my brain. It's all right. And 3 weeks ago, an amazing new gift, it's amazing, my son moved to Canada. Wow. Another surprise gift, because it just never ends. Like I said, it never ends. I never thought that would happen. So now he's got to adjust to all the stuff I had to adjust to, you know. And move here from New York, it's pretty wild, I'll tell you. But to get used to, because it's really cool here. People are nice and good AA, and good people, and the air is clean, and I love it here. So now he's moved here, and so the adventure of my life continues, one day at a time. And who knows what's going to happen to me tomorrow or next week, I don't know. But I know it's going to be good because I'm sober, doing what I need to do. I'm open for good things. I have people that I know, some that I don't know, you guys, you, that accept me and love me, and the gifts never end. I also have another daughter, I have a daughter and a son, but she won't move here because she's settled there. And I have two beautiful grandchildren, a 12-year-old and a 2-year-old, that I can appreciate and love, and they love me. And if I was drinking, none of everything I just said would be happening. None of it. And so it all begins where it began for me. Stay away from the first drink and you can't get drunk. And stay close to the meetings and everything's going to be okay. Thank you.